It's bourbonblanc.com live. Hey, it's one of my favorite people as well. It's Jordan Vine, master stiller, savage and cook, joining us live from Mare Island, California. We're going to talk about a lot of new things they're doing. What's happening, Jordan? How is it going there, Mare Island?
Oh, hell, man. Everything's happening out here. California is having a great year. We finally, you know, got enough rain that we're not gonna all go thirsty this year. We've got great snow up in the mountains. It's beautiful outside. It's sizing up to be a beautiful spring. And it's California. It's never that bad. Most exciting stuff out here at the distillery, though, for those of you who have been following along at home, we are in our fifth year. Letting 2020 be forgotten a little bit, because we lost a whole lot of whiskey production to hand sanitizer for that year, but I'm still just getting over that PTSD. Our whiskey was ready. I mean, we started sampling out of barrels, the bourbon at year four, the rye at year three, and everything tasted beautiful. And we made the decision to just take a hard pivot, stop bottling contract stuff. You know, up until now, it's been coming out of Indiana, Tennessee from the usual suspects. And we just we changed up the package.
Let's see it.
Yeah, went to the tall bottle, got rid of the the big graphics that have kind of occupied the main real estate on the bottle up till now. We went to a much simpler format.
You can read it right there. Though we love the old graphics, and if you can still find that on the shelf, it's wonderful juice. But this is 100% your own, and all from within 50 miles of the distillery.
Correct, sir. Correct. Yes. So all the grains are grown 50 miles away in Sacramento Valley in a little town called Winters, by one family, the Rominger Farms. Grains are collected by another family-owned company called Adams Grain around here, a smaller grain elevator and sorting plant. They clean everything. Everything shows up here, directly from their trucks. So we have to control that process from the field right to the cooker. And the barley is also grown there. The rye is grown during the winter months. We use a hard red, very, very hardy rye that grows through the winter months. The corn, the barley grown during the summer months. The barley is sent to a maltster in Alameda, and called Admiral Malting. And they do traditional old school floor malting and make this high diastatic power distiller's malt for us. It only takes 4% of that to convert the whole 10,000-pound batch mash bill. It's a 2-to-1 grist ratio, 5,000 gallons foundation liquid to 10,000 pounds of grain. And that 4% converts everything very efficiently, gets us a good high yield, about 10 to 11% ABV. And after fermentation, distillation, right here on site, it's a 5-day fermentation, continuous distillation running through a column and then a doubler assembly. And once that's done, we don't touch it with anything but spring water that comes out of Geyserville, which we truck down here at great peril to ourselves.
How long does it take to get it from Geyserville? Not too far away, but how long does that take?
It's it's about 2.5 hours away to get to the spring, and then you fill up 1,000 gallons of water on a truck, and you bring it back down. It's a lot of weight, and it's not a very well-developed road, so not the easiest thing to do, but that spring water is perfect. It's calcium, magnesium. Oh, my God. It's going to throw some people back to my Breckenridge days when they talked about water weight.
The water. Well, water matters. I mean, this is something you've always cared about, from Breckenridge, the snowmelt mountain water. This water from northern Sonoma County, right?
Correct. Yep.
And this is making some of the finest. We love Napa as well, but again, you picked this water, making some of the finest wines in the world. Why? What about this water?
Absolutely. I mean, it's really about the mineral content. It comes from two natural springs that are derived from a few hundred feet down and the side of this mountain in the aptly named Geyserville. Granite deposits that are in the soil that it settles in. You know, it's very much like, you know, what you get in Spencer County out in Kentucky with the with that water. So you get high calcium carbonate numbers, magnesium numbers, manganese trace amounts, you know, low metals. There's no iron. There's no, you know, obviously arsenic, things like this. So it, honestly, it's just beautiful, pristine, heavy water at about 7.9 pH, which would not make it ideal for fermentation kinetics, but it is really nice for a final blending water. We don't bother with it for fermentation because, well, you distill your fermented wash and you end up with distilled water. There's no.
So this is the water you're using for the blending for the proofing?
Correct. Yeah. All the cut water from, you know, we collect off the still, off the doubler at about 135 to 140 proof. I like it more at 135, but you know, things vary through the day. And we do that. We hold it a little bit higher than a lot of places. A lot of places bring it off at 125, 130. I'm not trying to make boring whiskey or something without, you know, enough congeneric influence to have an interesting flavor profile. But I like it just a little bit cleaner at that. Let the wood express itself a little bit more. So from that proof, the still proof to 120 proof, which is what we barrel at, that happens with the spring water only. Goes into barrel, ages 3 to 4 years, 3 years for the rye, 4 years for the bourbon. And then when we pull it from barrel, been seeing a real stable. I was very surprised by this. I mean, in these conditions, you know, here between the Napa River and San Pablo Bay, humidity stays pretty stable up in the, you know, 70s. Right. Barely dips below 65. And consequently, we've gotten pretty even alcohol and water evaporation as far as our angel share evaporative loss here on the island. So, putting it in at 120, we've been pulling it out at about 122, 123. Little bit of water evaporation increase in concentration, but not enough that it really matters at the end of the day when we have to dilute it back again with that spring water. You know, there's nothing worse than when you put it in at 120 and you pull it out at 138, 140. Sorry, Bookers. I love you. That's why they don't dilute that stuff, because you'd have to put so much water in it that, you know, it would...
And what we're going to taste this here in a moment. We'll talk about it now because we have a couple surprises for them as far as what's to come. But on the shelf now, we mentioned everything you're seeing on the shelf again, the rye, the bourbon, the American whiskey. It's all yours. It's all yours. You're putting it in wine barrels. Show us again that bottle that's in front of you. Yeah. That one, if you would, please. Thank you, Jordy's modeling the bourbon, the cask finish, Cabernet cask finish. Bourbon, and then of course you have the Grenache barrels finishing the rye, all just so beautiful. And if you haven't tried Savage and Hook for a while, or if you've never tried it, try it now. It's what you all have evolved into is so beautiful. But this is some of the last, or it is the last of your contract whiskey, right? Or the whiskey you purchased.
You know, it's
15 year old.
Last of what I have in the cell. Rick House, I'm not going to say I don't have some random barrels laying around that were made by other people, because that was, you know, that was what we've been doing for the last 4 years, keeping the lights on by bottling other people's whiskey aged in our conditions and with our own little finishing techniques and whatnot. And thank you for bringing that up, because you know me, man. I'm all over the place. Little unmedicated ADD going on over here. But we still do the same process that we did with the legacy bottles, finishing the bourbon in Cabernet Sauvignon casks. And again, we're not making wine flavored whiskeys here. It's 17% of it goes into Cabernet Sauvignon casks. Just a little nod to wine country, to Dave Finney's background, who was the founder here.
About 17% for this one or for most all of them?
17% for the our house bourbon whiskey. 25% for our rye goes into Grenache barrels. And again, I know I'm all over the place.
That's all right.
The only other thing we changed when we went to this format and more to the point to 100% made in-house whiskey, we brought the proof up to 100 proof. It used to be at 88 for the bourbon.
You brought the proof up on the core line. And again, the legacy bottles are the ones with the images on them. Could we call this a legacy bottle too? Or is this,
you know, this, I mean, we've been, program for
you've done well for years now.
Yeah, the last 3 years we've got, you know, all of them back here. This is a rye.
Yeah, the cognac finished rye, which we loved, and this one. Now again, this is a 15-year-old American. What makes this American? You say American whiskey. What's this? What is this?
Well, you know, it aged up in second use bourbon casks, so it doesn't qualify as
bourbon.
You know, the classification is whiskey, and then, you know, got your types, bourbon, rye, blah, blah, blah.
Right.
But, they all require aging in 100% new, unused oak containers.
Yeah.
With this one, it went into a second-use bourbon cask, much more like a Canadian or Scotch or Irish whiskey would.
We can't say a ton about it, but we know it came from Tennessee.
It did come from Tennessee, yes.
Does that mean it's a Tennessee whiskey or not exactly? Do we know?
It's not a Tennessee whiskey in the sense that, you know, it didn't go through the Lincoln County process.
Right.
Charcoal mellowed or however we're calling that. Now, I think charcoal mellowed still the Lincoln County process. So it didn't go through that. So it's, you know, it would have been a bourbon if it had gone into new coop.
Right.
Didn't, so it just qualifies for whiskey, and then whiskey looks lonely on the label, so we put American.
Well, let's show them this. I want to show them this because this is the wine. That's the bottle of the wine. That's the Our Lady of Guadalupe, right?
Correct. So this is Dave Finney's really his first domestic estate vineyard. It's over in Santa Rita Hills, which is you know, south of us.
Pretty new release, right?
Oh yeah, the first vintage went out last year. So, yeah.
So beautiful Pinot Noir.
Pinot Noir. I think there's four very particular clones that he selected for the site. Him and his vineyard manager. They grow beautifully there, and you know, it's kind of a departure for Dave. Most of his wines have been Zinfandel or Cabernet Sauvignon based most of the time. Although he's done everything at one point or another. But
and you picked that one. Why? I mean, this is, again, beautiful 15-year-old. I'm sure before it went into the wine barrel was just incredible. But drinking this now, the depth, the earth, the sweetness, why did you pick that wine barrel to do this one?
Well, I mean, as soon as he, you know, actually released the Our Lady of Guadalupe Pinot Noir, I knew I had to snatch those barrels before.
You snatched them up. You know a guy.
I knew a guy. So I got them. This just seemed to make the most sense. I did look at aging some rye in them, which I have done. I've got that aging up too. You might see that in the future. That will be our in-house made rye. But I still had this beautiful, at the time, 14-year Tennessee whiskey. And it just seemed perfect for those Pinot Noir barrels. That beautiful.
Beautiful.
Kind of blueberry, floral. Pinot Noir is so hard to
get. Yeah, you get some of those notes on this. Everything from fruit, floral to the mushroom.
Yeah, there's
it's a beautiful. And I even proof mine down just a touch. I mean, I like the 117 proof, but just proofing it a touch down, you're just getting such a combination. Oh, look at that.
Breathe.
You got the job. Breathe into that whiskey. Is this the last where there'll be more Gueros? I mean, under this label, will you have more Gueros in the future, or will you?
There will always probably be some out there. Still got some other stuff aging around, and I'm not afraid of putting our own stuff
in the
too, as we get older and older, because stuff is going to age out of my primary program. You know, hopefully you make a little bit more than you sell. Because then you don't ever run out, right? But as bourbon gets to be 5-6 years old, I don't want it in our core brand because I don't want to adjust people's palates to expect that older whiskey profile in there. So that'll
be. You're so talented. I mean, everything you've done here, everything you've ever done, I've loved. But I really love this Guero. I love the new bourbons. And if you have that right beside you, that bottle and bond, show them the mock-up bottle of what's to come. Tell us what's to come.
Mock up, and it's a poorly rendered mock up a little bit, but this is essentially what the bottle will be, and this will be out here just in a few weeks. Actually,
that's in a few weeks. It's the Bottle and Bond Bloody Butcher.
Yeah. So we grew some, Rominger Farms. I was talking about them earlier, who grows all of our corn and rye and barley. We decided a few years ago that we wanted to extend the brand. I had never made a weeded bourbon before. I've always been a rye guy. We decided to do an heirloom variety called Bloody Butcher, which is red corn. Very low yielding, hard to grow out here. It's prone to viral infections and, too much rain. And it, heirloom varieties don't like conditions that aren't ideal. You need dry Midwest conditions for most of that stuff. We were able to grow a good crop of Bloody Butcher out here. We took our red winter wheat, again, that's grown same time as our rye is grown. So it's a 70% Bloody Butcher corn, 26% red winter wheat, a hard winter wheat, and 4% of the same malted barley.
Wow. The same malted barley that you use in...
In all of our core brand, all of our health.
So you're mixing up the Bloody Butcher. You're putting the Bloody Butcher in there, and that's finished in one cask as well, or no?
Correct. Everything still goes into the same
Cabernet Sauvignon. This is a 4 year old, and then Cabernet for a few months.
Yes. Well, no, actually, this one does not see the Cabernet finish. It felt like gilding the lily a little. So it's 4 years in char number 3, new American oak. Heavy toasted before it's char. It's about a 45 minute toast, about a minute and 20 second char to get to a char number 3 and over a smudge pots and open fire. It's not radiant toasted or anything like that. Nothing wrong with that, but it's a very small cooperage. It does things by hand. Aged 4 years. It is the product. The first release will be the product of telling you this before we got on here. It's so funny, the TTB, it has to be a product of one season, but the TTB only recognizes two seasons, apparently, spring and fall. So this is a fall release.
It's from a fall release.
6 months of the year. And
will that be an annual release?
It will. We've made this every year since we decided to start doing it, which our first one was 4 years ago. And so I've got plenty to go. We did do a second one that did not yield as well. It's called Howlin' Mob. It's another variety. It's a very early ripening corn, ergo the name. People were starving by the time it got harvested. And so the Howling Mob would come out demanding their grain.
Where's my corn?
Exactly. Where's my corn?
Where's my bourbon? And this is a bourbon. The Howlin' Mob is a bourbon too.
The Howlin' Mob is a bourbon and bottled and bond.
But it's more going to be more limited.
There's only 30. I only ever made 31 barrels of it, and that'll be the only release that'll ever happen to that one.
So this is a one-off.
It is.
So this both coming out the next month or so.
They will. They'll be coming out definitely within the next month or two. We're bottling, and depending on where you're at in the country, it'll take a little bit to you, but.
Howlin' Mob a little more limited, and then we'll be seeing some of the Bloody Butcher.
Yes, that's one I'm very proud of. I made about 250 to 300 barrels every year for the last
four. Oh, wow. Years. This is really going to be price points on those each. Do we know what they are? Oh,
gosh, I don't even want to guess. That's
it's all right. We'll let them know. Let them know.
Thinks they can get. It.
We'll let them know. Hey, thanks for letting us be first to talk about it. And we tasted it recently and we love it. We really appreciate it, Jordan. And again, if you're a fan of what Jordan does, Savage and Cook, find this Guero, but also this one's limited. This is so good at 15 years old. Find everything they do, their core line, and go see them too. I love visiting these guys. I'm going to visit them later this year too.
Yeah.
We always have a good time.
Come by. We are here on this beautiful little island in the East Bay, the San Francisco Bay area. It's almost always gorgeous. You got the Napa River on one side, San Pablo Bay on the other. There's a ferry that brings you right to our doorstep from San Francisco, from the ferry building.
Incredible.
So I know California does have its problems sometimes, but
this is not one of them. This is never one of them, being with you.
A whiskey is not usually one of them.
And neither is Jordan usually. Hey, and I like the Negroni shirt too, man. Great Negroni shirt.
Yeah, this is from like a Tales of the Cocktail. From
I know. I was about to say, I think I remember that one. Jordan, always a pleasure. Thanks for letting us taste your finest. And we'll see you soon, my friend.
It is always great drinking with you. Thank you for always making me part of your show, man. And I really do appreciate you. And just thanks again. It's good to see you.
Welcome, Jordan. Cheers, man.